be explained.
By analyzing, by an analytical study of the working of this world, we can more easily assume a neutral vision of it instead of being overwhelmed by what's happening. We get the vision of detachment to see it as a separate thing from us. And then we traverse through life in a detached way, being philosophical. This is called Shastra Chakshu or Jnana Chakshu. Shastra Chakshu means, Chakshu means eye, seeing through the eye of the scripture instead of with my peacock feather eye. Peacock feathers have eyes, you know, and they're very pretty, but they can't see anything. So our eyes are like that. They can't even see through a piece of paper. And if you try and see the closest thing to you, what's the closest thing to you? It's your eyes. Something even closer than those. The eyelid is the closest thing to the eye. Everybody, can you try and see your eyelid? That's how perfect our eyes are. So seeing through the eye of scripture and seeing through the eye of knowledge, jnana chakshu. That's the purpose of Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura here, to detach us. To see that all the working, all the elements, all the senses, they're just a variegated phantasmagoria of the material world, interactions with the modes of nature, and they have nothing to do really with the soul proper. So tonight we're going to discuss a series of questions that Raghunath is asking his spiritual master, Srila Raghunath, to discuss Babaji Mahasaya, all about the workings of the world, our body, our karma, our ignorance, the elements of the material world, the sense objects, how to see them all in a scientific and detached way, so we don't become immersed, or so that we get out of the system. So Brother Nath is asking, what sort of karma or fruit of activity does the jiva perform in this material world? Fruit of activity means an action that bears a material result. It may be initially the result that I want, and ultimately it will always be a bad result. Suppose I perform a pious activity and I give money in charity to a hospital. That's a pious karma. What will happen? As a result, I'll be very healthy in the next life. That's nice. But I also have to suffer in my next life. So all the things that I did in this life inadvertently while I was making money to give to the hospital and while I was walking to the hospital, I stepped on so many insects, I cheated so many people to get the money, I ate sin in the name of food by not offering that food first to Krishna. So it seems that karmic activity can give good results, but that's part of the phantasmagoria. Like a strange lantern show. So now he's explaining that at first the jiva performs karmic activity in order to derive sense pleasure. But then, because he ultimately gets misery, then he performs more karmic activity to counteract the misery. And it just goes on ad infinitum. So in the course of continuing to explain karma, Babaji Mahasaya is talking about the different stages of the body. The body goes through six changes. Birth, growth, sustenance, that means it maintains itself for a while. Giving off byproducts. If I happen to be in a tree's body at that moment, then it will give off the byproduct of fruit. And if I happen to be in a human body at the moment, then it will give off children. And then there's dwindling and death. So these six transformations have inherent deficiencies. And those deficiencies are hunger, thirst, delusion, pride, envy, all various causes of pain. Then he explains the two kinds of karma sent by the two kinds of jiva. The pious engage in highest fruit of activity, and thus go to heaven. But then, the fruits of their actions get used up. And again, because they've also done so many sins, they come back to earth, but it may not be even human. I was once on a morning walk with Alice from the Prabhupada, and we passed by a bunch of buildings, and I was in New York, and on the building, there was, like, you know where there are cracks in the building, and then there's so many vines kind of growing out of it, and then in the sidewalk on the street, you know, the cement is kind of separated, and sometimes there's little grasses and little plants that come out of it. So Prabhupada stopped and he said, where do these come from? They came with the rain ahead of the plants. And then there's the impious jiva, who just straight out performs gross, sinful, gratificatory activity and displaying goes to hell. And there are so many varieties of hell. For example, the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam describes in somewhat detail. For example, if somebody has illicit sex, if a brahmana has illicit sex, then he has to go to a hell where simultaneous to being whipped and beaten by the constables of the god of death, that is the Yamadutas, very ghastly creatures, they have to simultaneously embrace a hot, molten, iron man or woman. Isn't that terrible? So whether they go to heaven, then they have to come again to earth, and if they go to hell, they come again to earth. First to the, after they practice suffering in different ways, like for example, in one planet called Kini Bojana, they become a worm and they eat other worms and other worms eat them. So after such practice, then they have to go through all the animal species before getting a human body again. Not necessarily all, but whatever fits what they did. And then, since they've been accustomed to eat all kinds of abominable things in the hell, which is well trained, so then they get a body of a pig and now it's natural for them. They eat everything up to school. So now, the jiva situated in the gross body, the subtle mind, undergoes all kinds of suffering due to these deficiencies. And he keeps trying to engage in activities to minimize the suffering, which in turn creates more suffering. We collect various foods in order to assuage his hunger. He gets wife, children, other relatives in order to exploit and enjoy those other people. He has to work hard to get warm clothing, to protect himself from the cold. Well, you may feel, what's wrong with getting warm clothing? Because after all, it's cold. Why do we have to have a body that gets so cold and has to go to work for so many hours a day to get warm clothing to cover it, when by nature the soul is in perfect temperature? Then he indulges in various sinful activities, such as fighting, enviousness, stealing, and other bad things, because he can control. Tonight we're having a lot of number systems. So now we're coming to six. Like there are six transformations, and similarly he has six foes. Foe means enemy. And what are his enemies? I think, she's my enemy, or she's my enemy. But actually, has six enemies only. That is lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, and envy. Now, one question else is asking, wouldn't Maya's purpose have been served if she only covered the jiva with a subtle body? So he said no, because we need the gross body to engage in the karmic activities. Although desire is developed in the subtle body, in order to fulfill those desires, one has to have a gross body. Otherwise, one is like a ghost, so frustrated that he can't fulfill his desires that he looks for other bodies to take over. So then he's asking, what is the relationship between karma and exclusive karma? Then he brings up one particular philosophy, which is called Karma Mimamsa philosophy, which says that God cannot award the fruits of one's activity because it's only an imaginary actor. It's the activity itself that controls what you get. There's no person behind it. We're so lucky that we came in contact with bona fide gurus and Vaishnavas and bona fide disciple succession. Then he's asking, you say that karma is beginning. Why do you say that? It's not eternal. So Babaji Mahasaya explains that the root of all karma is avidya, or ignorance. Well, first, the root of karma is the desire. Is desire to enjoy. And the desire to enjoy comes from ignorance, because ignorance of the fact that there's no enjoyment here. It's like if I put some apples or some rasagulas in my pocket, I'm not going to be able to taste anything. So this body is just like a jacket or a shirt. The body is like a coat and the mind is like a shirt. More subtle. So there's no enjoyment, so my desire to enjoy is filled by ignorance. And that ignorance is filled by forgetfulness of Krishna, which began which has no beginning in terms of material time. It happened before material time. That's why I was thrown into the world of material time. So karma is in relation to that desire, which is in relation to ignorance, which is in relation to turning away from Krishna. And therefore karma is said to be beginningless. It doesn't have any history of any beginning. Many begin to ask about, yesterday we discussed Rajna's question, what's the difference between Maya and Pradhan? Maya is the power of Krishna. Maya is the deluding potency of Krishna. And Krishna created the material world through the medium of this Maya Shakti. Pradhan is itself the inert element. Maya is the power by which Krishna created the inert element. Ignorance is in relation to the jiva, because dead man doesn't have the wherewithal to be ignorant or smart. And Maya has two divisions. One is ignorance, avidya, and the other is pradhana. One in relation to jiva and the other in relation to matter. And then there's two other divisions of Maya. One is avidya and one is vidya, knowledge and ignorance. The Isopanishad talks about knowledge and ignorance in a very interesting way. It stated that one result is obtained by the culture of nesha, and another result is obtained by the culture of knowledge. It's totally different results. Those who engage in the culture of nesha go to the darkest region of ignorance. And those who engage in the culture of so-called knowledge are worse still. So-called culture of knowledge, culture of so-called knowledge means material advancement of civilization. That means adding a burden on the ass, which is already carrying a great burden. Then he's asking, what is the function of pradhana? What is the function of inert matter? Like, suppose I look around me, anywhere I go, and I see inert matter. And I think its function is to give me pleasure. But here he's explaining what is the real function of it. Pradhana is actually the unmanifest material nature, which existed before Lord Vishnu, Mahavishnu, placed his glance over it. And when he glanced over his unmanifest material nature, it became manifested as the varieties of all the different ingredients and all the paraphernalia. Now, from the pradhana, or this unmanifested matter, the first element that comes out is false ego. And it's produced by the commands of the Lord of the pradhana. What Babaji Mahasaya is about to do now is he's summarizing the teaching of Lord Kapiladeva to his mother, Devamuti, in the Srimad Bhagavatam third canto, where Kapiladeva is explaining how from how the Lord lies down, Bhagavad Vishnu lies down in the water that covers half the universe. What we're seeing when we look out into the sky is only the top half of the universe. The bottom half is all filled with water. And the Lord lies down. And then from his navel lake comes Lord Brahma. And then all the planets come out of that. That's Garbhagaksha. this universe. But outside all the universes together is Mahavishnu, who glances over Pradhan, and then all the universes come out of the pores of his body, like little things of sweat, and the sweat comes out of the pores. So, like perspiration, the universes start atomically from within his body and grow into these big universes when they come out. And that's when he exhales. When he inhales, they all again enter into his body. So from the Pradhan, mixed with the glance of the Lord, mixed with the time element, which the Lord also creates. So from that, false ego comes. False ego is manifest in the three modes of nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. From false ego and the mode of passion comes the senses. From false ego and the mode of goodness comes the mind. From false ego and the mode of ignorance comes the whole sky, ether. And this is all coming only because of the glance of the Lord, otherwise there is no transformation. And then that ether transforms by the glance of the Lord in the course of time and becomes air. Ether contains sound. You know how you talk on the telephone? That's because sound is traveling through the wire, through the ether. The wires are connecting to the ether. That's where sound is located. Air, the transformation of the ether, mixed with the glance of the Lord and time, the time element, has sound and touch. And then, gradually, the air transforms by the glance of the Lord, mixed with the element of time, and becomes fire. And fire has the extra element of form or sight. And then gradually the fire transforms by the glance of the Lord, mixed with the time element, and becomes water, which has the extra quality of taste. And then that transforms by the glance of the Lord, mixed with the element of time, and becomes earth, which has the extra quality of snow. So he's explaining this is how the elements are gradually created. Now we're going to talk about the five sense objects. Now these are all the ingredient cause. But the efficient cause is the Lord himself. Just like you have clay, and you have a clay on a potter's wheel. That raw clay mixes with water and becomes a pot, or spinning. So without the potter, is it possible? Not at all. So without the glance of the Lord, none of these developmental transformations are possible. Therefore, we depend on the Lord for everything and have faith in his mercy. Then he explains how from the Mahatattva, which is the aggregate of all 24 elements, intelligence is also one of the subtle elements. And contaminated consciousness and false ego, mind, intelligence, contaminated consciousness and false ego, four subtle elements. And they're all actually produced, as we just discussed, from the false ego. Do you know what that means? It means they're all manifestations of false ego. which is good to know, because otherwise we get too entrenched. I think this is me and this is reality. Then he's explaining about the 24 elements. There are 10, five knowledge acquiring senses and five working senses. The knowledge acquiring senses are sight, knowledge acquiring senses are the eyes, ears, nose, touch. That's it. Eyes, ears, nose, touch, and tongue. The five working senses are the arms, the legs, the belly, the anus, and the genitals. And there are five sense objects: sound, touch, taste, smell, and sight. Then there's the mind. That's 16. See if we can find more. Oh yeah, then there's the intelligence, the contaminated consciousness, and the false ego. Oh, and earth, water, fire, air, and ether. The five gross elements. So then the atomic little teeny Anuchitkana, the infinitesimal atomic conscious jiva, enters into that whole mess, and we think this is the absolute truth. And my goal of life is to enjoy this. Enjoy the body. Yesterday we discussed Babaji Mahasaya's exposition of the five kinds of degrees of contaminated consciousness. Those that are fully contracted consciousness to the point where they're almost matter, which is like plants, stones, trees, and then slightly developed is the animals, insects, birds. Developed as humans, more developed as demigods and sadhana bhaktis, and more developed as sabhava bhaktis, fully developed as sabhava bhaktis. And what about the premi bhaktis, those who love Krishna? They don't have any, there's no question of developed if they are. They're not covered anymore. They're situated in a bhakti city for their purely spiritual body. And he explained that when one gets the body of a tree or a plant or a stone, it's due to some, of course, many sinful activities. As our Srila Prabhupada had said, you should say a lot. Somebody wants to go to the beach naked. So Krishna said, all right, stand naked 5,000 years as a tree. So this is a general question and answer period of this chapter 16. What about the conditioned soul? What kind of karma does he have? What kind of ignorance does he have? What is his body made of? What is his mind made of? Why is there independence? Why does Krishna have to have this as one of his pastimes, having Jesus suffer so much? What is this world? And it's been explained by Babaji Mahasaya that it's nothing but a fiery furnace. But a fiery furnace has a function also. nine caverns. So Maya is the three modes of nature of is the hammer and the anvil or platform of material existence. And through Maya, Krishna purifies the jiva who wanted to enjoy separately from him. There are easier ways for those who don't have such a big job. Like all souls have the same qualities. They are the enjoyers, they're the doers, they're conscious, they're independent, they're by nature servants of Krishna, they're by nature full of love. They're beyond time and space, but some of them, or innumerable of them, right from their creation, which doesn't have any beginning because we're all eternal, they properly use their independence to madly want to serve Krishna. So they will manifest. Baladeva knew that soul would be like that, so he manifested them straight into the Loka Vrindavan. Then there are souls who had a little bit of a problem. They were manifest from Karanadakshaya Vishnu. They had some sense of this separate desire. But then, when they were given the chance to choose, by chance, even without the knowledge of the Lord's glory, they happened to look in the direction of the spiritual realm. And Maya immediately took them and brought them to the Loka Vrindavan. And then there are those with big problems who chose to look towards matter, and then Maya grabbed them and gave them an infinite variety, one after another, of souls and several bodies. And then within that, there were so many different kinds of jivas, as we discussed. Those who are immoral atheists, those who are moral atheists, those who are moral theists, those who are sadhan bhaktis, and those who are bhava bhaktis. So we have an easier and hard time depending on our use or misuse of independence. The soul is not with Krishna, rather Krishna is all merciful, but our ignorance is lamentable. These are the words of Babaji Namaskaya. So now, it was getting late, so Babaji Namaskaya told Rajanath to think about everything that he's heard and to go home and come back the next day. So he went home fully contemplating his Gurudev's message. Then in the meantime, Rajanath's grandmother, as we heard in the last couple of days, she was trying to complete the arrangement for his marriage. And in the evening, she explained everything to him, that this was her plan. So Rajanath took his meal in silence. He made no reply, but he lay awake in his bed that night, in deep thought about the nature of the pure spirit soul and the nature of the conditioned soul who turned away from Krishna. So he's contemplating that, and in the meantime, his grandmother is trying to figure out different ways to get him married. Now, the grandmother has a friend named Vaini Madhava, who's a very, very crooked and evil person. He's like the person who thinks that the person who went to devotional service is just brainwashed, and he wants to save his friend from that and come back to normal material life. And he is Prajna's cousin. Venu Madhava is Prajna's cousin. And the girl that the grandmother and Venu Madhava, Veni Madhava, were trying to arrange for, she's also his cousin on the other side, on the flower side. So Veni Madhava inquired, "What's the matter, grandmother? Why are you delaying arranging Brother Braj's marriage?" So she was very anxious in her reply. And she said, "My son, you're an intelligent boy. Perhaps he will change his mind if you speak to him. All my efforts have been in vain. As we read yesterday, there were huge fights between all the ladies of the house on one side and Rajana Kavan on the other side, all giving their arguments." So Veni Madhava's body was just like his character. He was very short, he had a small neck, a black complexion, and his eyes blinked frequently. You can imagine that. He liked to pry into everything that wasn't his business, rather than taking care of his own business. And his involvement in other people's affairs was never particularly useful. So after listening to the old lady, he frowned slightly and said, "Oh, this is no problem. I just need your permission. Veni Madhava can accomplish anything." This would call him an immoral atheist, or a different kind of people. "You know me quite well. I can make money just by counting the ways. Let me discuss this with him, this one. If I succeed, then you'll treat me to a nice feast of puri and kachori." So the grandmother said, "He's asleep now. He's taken his meal and he went to sleep. Okay, in the morning I'll come and see him." The next day he returned early in the morning, carrying a lotus, you know those lotus, or aloka in his hand, and he completed his morning ablution. When Brajanath saw him, he was a little surprised and said, "Brother, why did you come so early in the morning?" So Veni Madhava answered, "Oh, old brother, you've been studying and teaching Nyai Shastra." Nyai Shastra means, Nyai means logic, and there are Nyai Shastras which proclaim to be able to figure out everything in the spiritual world and the material world by logic. Whereas all of the teachers in Jagadharma are teaching their students that logic can never touch spirit. And even though I'm telling you all the information about the philosophy, because we're dealing with Maya's influence on words, see, the material word, and material conceptions of time and place, you won't be able to understand what I'm saying just by my words. Only by doing bhajan will you be able to understand everything." "So you've been studying teaching Nyai for a long time, and you're the son of Pandit Harinath Chidamani, and you've become famous all over the country. You're the only surviving male member of our family, and you don't have any heirs. So who do you suppose will take care of this big house in your absence? We have a request, brother. Please get married." The brethren said, "Brother, don't give me unnecessary trouble. Nowadays, I'm accepting the shelter of Gorsundar's devotees, and I don't have any desire to be involved in worldly affairs. I find real peace in the company of the Vaishnavas in Mayapur, and I don't find any attraction to this world. I will either accept sannyas, or I'll spend my life in the shelter of the Vaishnavas' lotus feet. I've expressed my heart to you, because I know that you're a close friend, but don't disclose this to anyone." So then, Vaini Madhava could understand that nothing but trickery could change the situation, could change Pragnath's mind. So he very cleverly curbed his feelings. Imagine people think that they can achieve in the presence of God as such atheists, not believing that they can't have anything from Krishna who's giving the results of all the cheating. So in order to create a particular impression, he said, "I've always remained your assistant in whatever you've done. I used to carry your books when you were studying in Sanskrit school. And I would carry your staff in your water cart as a sannyasi." And then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, "It is very difficult to understand the mind of wicked persons. They have two tongues, and they say one thing with one tongue and one thing with the other. They're bandits in the garb of saints, carrying the name of three realms in the mouth and a knife under the armpit. But Rajanath on the other side, on the other hand, he was a very simple person. Warming, he became warm to Vaini Madhava's sweet words. And he said, 'Brother, I've always regarded you as my dear friend. Grandmother is just an old woman, and she doesn't understand serious matters. She's very enthusiastic to drown me in this ocean of material affairs. Getting me married to some girl, it'll be a relief if you change your mind and somehow persuade her. I'll always be indebted to you.' So then Lady Monica said, 'No one will dare to oppose your desire as long as Vaini Madhava is here. Now we'll leave you in this suspense for the moment and ask, oh, tomorrow night is Kalika Devi's appearance day. So the discussion will be about Kalika Devi. And then the next day, in the morning, we go to see Srila Gurudev, and whoever comes back here will be having a festival throughout the day. And also tomorrow, about 1,300 or 1,400 books are coming here, and you can all engage in free book distribution of Hindi books by Bhante Bihari, right outside here on the Krishna Mars, throughout Goya Bazaar, wherever you like, but these are books to just distribute. If people want to give donations, fine. If not, as long as they show an interest, it's fine. And if you see, if you pass by or a bunch of people coming to the temple and you want to give to them, I guess it's most practical, like just to give to the ladies or just to give to the men, instead of both, if they're probably married to each other. So just to give some to each group, so we'll share. So are there any questions on this?
Yes, please.
Loud? Yes, please.
You had a pending question about the Sadasya Shakti in Guru Jatra relating to the chair.
So your pending question is that Balaram, on one side, he is the undivided principle of Guru, and all of the Gurus manifest from him. On the other side, we see that he is the head or the root of Tattva Shakti, or the Jiva. So what is the question?
How does it relate together?
How do they relate together? So we know, we'll find out in the 17th chapter, which is entitled, I think, The Jivas Free from Maya. How do the Jivas get out of Maya? He gets out of Maya by taking shelter of bona fide Guru. And all the Gurus are manifested in Baladeva. Guru is a... It's not like the Jivas who are manifested by Baladeva, in the sense that Baladeva or Krishna takes the form of Guru. Guru is not Krishna or not Balaram, but they're manifestations of their mercy. And if you take all of Krishna's mercy, all the mercy, and make a form out of it, that's Guru. So Balaram is many things. Balaram is also the source of innumerable incarnations. Rama, Shringa, Varaha, the three Purusha avatars, who are Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, Supastol, Kiridakshaya Vishnu. He's also serving Krishna in all the five rasas. He's the first expanding nothing but Krishna in the mood of a servant. Krishna himself, taking the mood of a servant of Krishna, becomes Balaram. They're one, only their color is different. And Balaram has the mentality that I am serving. Does that help?
Yes, and from there also arrives the other question of the other day, which says that how is it connected, the Maya Shakti is connected with him, the Maya Shakti which is the vice of house of the Jiva.
How is the Maya Shakti connected with him?
With Balaram.
Because Balaram's expansion, Mahavishnu, glances over the Maya and makes the whole material world. Then Balaram becomes Guru and helps the Jiva out of the material world, out of the clutches of Maya. And we'll explain that in this very 17th chapter. So Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol, Panchikovati Vyasa Vishnu Devita, Kitanam Parame Vyo Vishnu Yom Anama. Shri Gurudev Kijai, Shri Prabhupada Kijai, Shri Bhakti Vinod Thakur Kijai, Bhajanath Guru Kijai, Shri Babaji Mahasaya Kijai, Bhagavan Kijai, Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Kijai, Sachinandan Gaur Hari Kijai.
You mean? Who? Shakti Gopal's leaving.
Jaya.